In the road, the sun no longer shines. Perpetual gray twilight shrouds a landscape where nothing grows and nothing lives. Trees stand blackened and bare, their branches reaching skyward like desperate, pleading hands. The air tastes of ash, and even snow falls gray through the poisoned atmosphere. Father and son trudge through this wasteland, their breath forming clouds in the frigid air, their feet wrapped in rags and plastic bags. The cold is relentless, seeping through layers of scavenged clothing, challenging their every step with bone-deep hostility. What makes this setting so profoundly disturbing is its terrifying plausibility. McCarthy never explains what caused this apocalypse, but the result feels hauntingly possible. When the pair discovers a single withered apple or a patch of mushrooms growing in some damp corner, the moment becomes almost sacred, a glimpse of life's tenacity amid universal death. These tiny remnants remind us what we take for granted, the simple miracle of growing things, of seasons changing, of life perpetuating itself. The landscape mirrors the character's stripped-down existence. Just as the world has been reduced to ash and memory, human concerns have distilled to their most fundamental level: survival, protection, love. In one moving scene, the father finds a can of Coca-Cola, perhaps the last one on Earth, and gives it to his son. The boy's simple joy as he tastes this relic becomes a powerful symbol of lost civilization and the endurance of human connection. At its heart, The Road is a love story between a father and son navigating the apocalypse together. Their relationship forms the emotional core of the narrative, a beacon of humanity in an inhuman landscape. The father's devotion becomes his reason for living, his moral compass, and his legacy. He balances dual responsibilities, keeping his son alive while preserving his humanity. He teaches survival skills, yet nurtures the boy's compassion. "We're still the good guys," the father repeatedly assures his son, even as circumstances force them into morally ambiguous situations. Their physical intimacy counters the novel's bleakness. They sleep curled together for warmth, the father checking the boy's breathing, washing his hair in cold streams, examining him for injuries. As the father's health deteriorates, their roles begin to shift. The boy increasingly takes on responsibilities, showing compassion that sometimes surpasses his father's. When encountering other survivors, it is often the boy who advocates for kindness, turning his father's teachings back on him, because we're the good guys. In this desolate world, most survivors have abandoned morality for survival. Roaming bands practice cannibalism, hunting humans for food. The father and son discover horrific evidence: human captives kept as livestock, headless bodies in a smokehouse, and an infant roasted on a spit. These encounters raise profound questions about what goodness means when it seems to ensure extinction. The father carries a pistol with two bullets, for protection and as a last resort if capture becomes inevitable. He instructs his son to use the gun on himself rather than face what would follow. Despite preparing for the worst, the father maintains certain boundaries. When starvation threatens, he refuses to consider cannibalism. "We would never eat anybody, would we?" the boy repeatedly asks. "No, of course not," the father answers, though the question becomes harder as hunger intensifies. This tension between survival and morality creates powerful moments. After forcing a thief to strip naked at gunpoint, effectively condemning him to death by exposure, the boy's silent disapproval haunts the father. "You're not the one who has to worry about everything," he says. "Yes, I am," the boy responds. "I am the one." Throughout their journey, the father and son push a shopping cart containing their worldly possessions, a powerful symbol of consumer culture reduced to bare survival. What once represented abundance now carries only essentials: a tarp, food cans, matches, blankets, and a pistol with few bullets. The cart embodies remnants of the pre-apocalyptic world, with the Father's repairs to its squeaky wheel reflecting humanity's failing attempt to maintain past technologies. When it finally breaks beyond repair, it marks a significant transition in their journey. The Father preserves his son's treasures, a toy truck, colored rocks, a reed flute, recognizing these useless objects nourish the boy's spirit. They also carry books despite their weight, passing down cultural values through narrative. Their most crucial possession remains the pistol with its two bullets, both protection and terrible mercy. The Father has taught the boy to use it on himself if captured, a lesson the child has absorbed with solemn understanding. This mercy haunts their journey. Is it an act of love or an abandonment of hope? Carrying the fire is the novel's central metaphor for moral goodness and human dignity that father and son fight to preserve. This fire represents their refusal to surrender to barbarism despite desperate circumstances. When the boy asks if they are still the good guys, he's questioning whether they maintain this internal flame. The metaphor works on multiple levels. Literal fire provides warmth and light in their cold, dark world, while their internal fire offers moral warmth in an ethically barren landscape, illuminates right action amid moral ambiguity, and protects their humanity. As the father's health fails, he focuses on transferring this fire to his son. In their final conversation, when the boy questions if the fire is real, the father affirms, "It's inside you. It was always there. I can see it." This transforms a potential comforting fiction into recognition of the boy's inherent goodness, persisting in a world designed to extinguish it. In a landscape reduced to ash, preserving this internal flame becomes defiance against the universe itself. When the boy eventually meets other good guys who are carrying the fire, it suggests this moral flame, passed between people, might someday rekindle a world gone cold. The novel's conclusion brings both death and renewal. After the father dies, the boy stays with the body for 3 days, an echo of resurrection narratives, before returning to the road where he meets a stranger who invites him to join his family. The boy's first questions reflect his father's teachings: "Are you one of the good guys?" and "Are you carrying the fire?" The stranger's family includes a woman who embraces the boy and speaks of God, suggesting goodness might survive and rebuild human community. McCarthy complicates this hope with the final paragraph about brook trout with vermiculate patterns that were maps of the world in its becoming, maps and mazes, of a thing which could not be put back. This implies that while human goodness might endure, the natural world's ancient beauty and ecological interconnection has been irretrievably lost. What remains is the fire within us, the capacity for love, compassion, and moral courage even when the world offers no reward. The road serves as both environmental warning and testament to human dignity in darkness, questioning what fire we carry and how we'll preserve it in a world that threatens to extinguish it.